following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Milk and Sea Audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. This is Bill Holwig again, and tonight, as a special treat, our last Swag Cast before the Halloween season begins here on Swag and at the Sea for OTR Horror and Original Horror, is a special release for another Swag Cast recreation of a classic OTR show, Junkyard from X-1. Our Broken Sea version was mixed by none other than my groovy buddy and the master of vocals, Kerry Ayers, who I will turn the microphone over to. And after Kerry gets done describing all the fun and chaos that went into making Junkyard, bringing it to fruition from voice acting to mixing to all points in between, we will play our revised version, which also played on the Sonic Society about a month ago. Thank you, Jack Ward. And then, as a compare and contrast, we'll play the original episode cleaned up for the Swag Cast. Hope you enjoy tonight, and here's Kerry Ayers.
Hello, dear listener. My name is Kerry Ayers. I am the producer and mixer and all-around noisemaker for the Junkyard recreation from X-1 that we've done. From what I understand, what I've been asked to do here is kind of give you kind of a contrast comparison between the two, maybe talk a little bit about what the process was behind making the updated version that we did. I guess the first thing would be there is quite a bit of change between the two in one aspect right off the bat, sexuality. In the original Junkyard, the entire cast was male. There was not any women whatsoever in it, because back in the 1950s when they originally wrote the script, and back when the story was originally written, the idea of women sharing with men in space was a pretty alien concept for a lot of Americans and a lot of everybody all over the place. The reason why we brought people in, actually it was kind of funny, Bill had suggested it, and it was a very good idea, I thought. And then we started noticing that there was some he-she references in the script that was written. The transcriber had done a fairly good job, but had missed a couple spots there on that. So we went ahead and just took advantage of it, made sure to change over all the scripting after I'd already sent the script out to everybody, and have them re-record the bits and pieces that would need to have a certain reference. There's actually one mistake, and if you guys want to listen to it again to see if you can find it, I'll let you look, or listen rather. The difference then is definitely the situation that there's been a lot of growth in the mental state between men and women. There's a couple of other X-1 shows that really do show that. This one just shows it by the absence. There's another one called Cold Calculation, in which the only protagonist in it was, or antagonist in it really is the fact that a ship that's sent out with only so much fuel will get exactly to where it needs to go when it knows how much weight it has and how much it's trying to support and everything on the way. And the whole idea of that story was that there was a life pod that was being sent out with some very, very vital life-saving drugs against a plague that was taking over a planet. And somebody who was a silly little girl decided to climb on board and, of course, messed up the coefficients. Through the course of that episode, we find out that the pilot's going to have to take her and eject her out into space. He's going to have to actually kill her by ejecting her, because if she stays on board, everybody on the planet dies, because he's not going to make it. There's just no way for him to do it. And it's the cold calculations that cause that, the cold calculations of space and the harshness of it. So I think that was probably another reason why, back at the time, they were thinking of trying to separate the quote-unquote fairer sex from the exploration. However, as it has been proven over and over and over again, and I know Elaine and Tanya will like this bit I'm going to give in here, it has been proven over and over and over again that women are actually stronger. They are more resilient. They are more able to keep concentration with lack of sleep. I mean, my God, anybody who's ever thought about raising children should realize that. But it doesn't come across that way in the 1950s. It's just not there. So there's a big contrast there. We got a doctor who's a female. We have a tech who's a female. I didn't make the captain female for two reasons. One, I really wanted one person to do the role. And secondly, there was just so much of a reference to kind of a rough gruffness about him that, yeah, maybe I'm being sexist now, but it didn't seem that it would fit right with a feminine voice. It just seemed like what we needed was an old, tired PT boat commander giving us the lowdown on what was going on his log. And it's something that, once again, it's just that was really the only reason why I didn't. I think we've come a long way, and so with that left off and just not dangling there, let's go into some other aspects of it. One of the most amazing aspects of it was that this, to me, was an incredibly wonderful learning experience. I did not know the equipment that I had would do what I was able to make it do. First of all, I'm brand new to all of this for the most part. The technology and such like that, yeah, I've learned on analog equipment, but the whole digital way of recording is a very different thought process. In some ways, in old analog sound, you were thinking of deadening everything. You were trying to get everything dead, getting quiet, getting dark. In a lot of cases, if you try to do that with digital too much, all it does is it sounds suffocated. It sounds like the room is has no life. And one of the reasons why I think Stevie and Bill both suggested, Stevie K. Farnaby, Bill Holwick, two of our phenomenal guys there at Broken Sea that kind of run the place and take care of us all, they both had said, you know, you're going to have to put some spatial echo to set it up from one area to another so you can show some differentiation when they're inside and outside the ship, different rooms, stuff like that. And at first I didn't quite understand where that was really coming from, but now I do. It is a psychological effect, yes. But there is also an effect, I think, in digital that makes the sound different. The entire creation of it is different. Instead of it being something that's being recorded that's actually having to actually change a magnetic ribbon's polarity bit by bit. It's just doing ones and zeros, ones and zeros, ones and zeros. So there's always going to be, in the old analog recording, I think there's always going to be a smoothness that we will never have in digital, no matter how many kilobytes you put per second. With that aside, that was where I was coming from. That was what I was learning on. The whole learning curve for me was really about spatials, about how the equipment responds, how easily you can edit something to death and not fix it. That's one thing about this technology that is definitely something you got to be careful of. You can spend all your time obsessing over getting one frame right. Not even a second, just a frame right. So that all the interaction sounds just perfect and just so. And you can find yourself doing that so much that you just kind of microscope your project to death. I started to do that, and it really took Stevie and Bill both saying, you know, let's try it again, go back, go over it again, to make me actually kind of loosen up and get back a couple of steps from it, not be that detail-oriented, because it was killing the project. And I wasn't making my health any better trying to keep working it over until I was driving myself crazy with it. I guess that in the old days, they did a lot of interaction with each other because they were all on the same sound stage. They were all performing at the same time. For those of you who are unaware, Stevie is in England. Bill's in Texas. I'm in Colorado. I believe we've got Mr. Are you in Chicago? I think he's in Chicago. I think Mac is in Chicago. Tanya is, I believe, in California. And Tanya, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. In other words, it was spread out all over the place. Nobody was recording at the same time. Nobody was seeing each other. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until recently that I'd even seen what Bill and Stevie look like. And it's been a weird process. So instead of being all in the same room where we were interacting with each other, or they were interacting with each other more to the point, they were having to interact off of what they had hoped would be the responses of somebody else, or what they would anticipate. And quite frankly, these guys are great. They did figure it out. A lot of me just choosing the different takes. Once I got the takes down and started laying them against each other, it sounded very conversant. It sounded like they were talking to each other. And it didn't take but a few tweaks to make it sound even closer. So I would say the acting style has had to change a lot. Whereas interacting was more important, I think, back in the early days, truly acting is more important now. You're having to do a real emoting of the situation, because you're not only having to carry the listener across the board with your oh, there's something over there. You're having to also carry across that you're cueing off of somebody you're never hearing, and you're cueing somebody else that will never hear you. With that in mind, it really does change your mindset. It did change mine anyway when I started learning how to record on the equipment. And I think it's something that is a little bit more acting oriented but less interactive. I think we sound more like we are doing it correctly. We sound like we're professional and we're clear with it and we understand it, but there's a lot less of the possibilities of the human interaction being caused just by interacting. A lot of some of the best scenes in a lot of the old science fiction movies and a lot of the old science fiction TV series, especially those that were filmed back in the, you know, in Kinescope, and that were done live on set, was the stage figuring of it. You were literally talking to the other person. You did it that one time. That was it. You didn't get to go back. You didn't get to explain that it was Uncle Fred that was doing that. You had to make sure you got it in there the first time. And if you didn't get it in that sentence, boy, you better get it in the next sentence you got a shot at. I guess that's a good place to leave it. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Countdown to blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, 5. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you will live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X minus one. Tonight's story, Junkyard by Clifford D. Sumac.
The funny thing about the whole thing was the fact that we had never intended to land on Planet 9. We circled it and decided it was strictly a low-grade affair. Wouldn't amount to anything for a billion years or so. As commander of the Galactic Survey Team, I couldn't waste my time on it. Then my exec saw this junkyard through the telescope. We landed, took a look at a load of alien machine parts discarded by some other spaceship, and then prepared to take off for Earth. It had all been a waste of time.
Engine room, MacGyver.
This is Commander Warren. All secure?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Countdown to blastoff.
Engine room ready, sir.
X minus 5. Minus 4. Minus 3. Minus 2. Minus 1. Fire! Mac, what's wrong down there?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Brady, get the data analyzer ready. We'll have to correct for a new takeoff time.
It's the first time I've ever heard of engine failure before takeoff.
Better before than after. Engine room.
Yes, sir.
What's happening? You guys ready yet?
No, sir.
Well, burn it, man. Get going. I want those engines started.
Sir.
What is it?
I don't quite know what to say.
Well, say something or I'll have you busted.
We can't start the engines, Commander. At least, I can't.
Well, why not?
I don't know.
Fine. Put Klein on.
Lieutenant Klein, sir?
Lieutenant, what's going on down there? Is there something wrong with the engines?
No, sir. I've double-checked them.
Well, then, let's get them heated up, or we'll be on this godforsaken planet for the rest of our lives.
We can't do it, sir.
Klein, suppose you tell me exactly why you can't start the engines. Can you do that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Why?
Because, sir, we can't remember how.
What?
Yes, sir, we've forgotten how to start the engines.
Lieutenant, report up here in 1 minute. Bring Dr. Spencer with you.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brady. Where have you got it?
Got what, Ira?
Don't play innocent. You and I have been doing planet surveys together for 15 years. You carry enough dead weight and grain alcohol on every trip to keep you happy for a million light years. Now, obviously, the crew in the engine room have gotten into it.
Impossible.
Where is it?
I've got a few fists in my locker. Nobody's touched it. I checked.
Well then, somebody has got some in the engine room.
Lieutenant Klein, sir, I've brought Dr. Spencer as you've ordered.
Hello, Doc. Did Klein here tell you what's going on?
She did.
How long will it take you to get these guys sobered up?
I can't.
Why not?
Because they're not drunk. I tested Klein in my office.
Now wait a minute, Doc. Are you trying to get me to actually believe that my crew, intergalactic engineers with years of hyperfission experience, have forgotten how to start the engines of this ship?
That's right.
You're serious?
Dead serious, Ira. Something, somehow, is causing to forget how to start the engines.
There it was. It fit in perfectly with a lot of other annoying little things that had been happening to us ever since we put down on Planet 9. It was to have been a routine exploration of a low-grade, uninhabited planet. Some routine exploration. All right, Klein. Now listen to me. Do you have any manuals aboard? engineering manuals.
Yes, sir.
Take the engine room crew and study those manuals. They'll tell you how to start the ship, won't they?
Yes, sir.
Okay, get going. Doc, I'd like you to stay here with me and Brady for a minute.
Okay.
And report back to me, Klein.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Doc. You're supposed to be an expert on space medicine. What is it?
I've never seen anything like it, Ira.
Brady?
Search me, Captain. I've seen him with space blues, alien psychosis, the works, but I've never seen a disease that can make a crew forget how to start the engines.
Maybe it isn't a disease.
Okay, what then?
Maybe it's deliberate.
You mean they're faking?
No, I know Klein and the others too well for that. I mean, maybe there's some outside influence.
Doc, we've surveyed this planet from top to bottom. We know there isn't a living cell on it.
What about the junkyard?
Junkyard? What junkyard?
Oh, he means that pile of rusty space engine parts we found. The crew nicknamed it the junkyard.
He's right. Somebody put it there.
Well, we know that another spaceship landed here. We know that from the blast marks on the rock. We know that for some unexplained reason they took their engine apart and tried to put it together again. We know they succeeded in building a much simpler engine, leaving a lot of spare parts. And we know they took off. The blast-off marks tell us that, too.
What we don't know is whether or not they left somebody behind, or something.
What about that stone tower, Ira?
The crew looked it over. It's just a pile of stones. They probably threw them together as a shelter while they were rebuilding their engine.
I don't like that tower, Ira.
Why not?
I don't know. It's scary and had that black look about it. The smell of death. I felt it when I walked past the Klein and Mackay.
Ah, that's the Celt in you. Banshees and spooks.
I still don't like it. I need a drink.
Skip it. We should be ready to blast off in a few minutes. Engine room. Engine room! What's going on down there? Engine room! Lieutenant Klein!
Daddy? Is that you? Daddy, have you brought me a present? Daddy, I'm scared!
Doc, I think we better get to that engine room.
Daddy, I'm scared!
When Doc examined Klein, she found her to have the mind and memory of a 6-year-old.
That's it, Ira. Something drained Klein of her memory, and that's as much as I can tell you.
That's a big help.
Here's the manual she was reading.
Well, at least we can follow this manual and get off this stinking planet. Hand it to me.
Right here. Anything wrong, Ira? Is it all there?
It's all here, Doc. This is the engine manual that tells all about the engine. How they operate, how to locate trouble, how to fix them, how to start them.
Well, what is it then? You're sweating like a pig.
All of a sudden, I can't remember the symbols, Doc. I've forgotten how to read. I left the engine room and went through the lock to stand on the outside platform of the ship. I looked over the junkyard where the metal of the rusted engine parts gleamed. There was a riddle here. A riddle we hadn't been able to figure out. Why had an alien spaceship landed here, ripped out its engines, and then put together a simple, less efficient engine, and taken off again? And they had worked in an awful hurry, judging by the mess they left. Why?
Mind if I join you, Ira?
No. Help yourself, Doc. How's Klein?
We've made her some toys. She's playing with them. I've assigned Mac to see that she doesn't hurt herself.
Doc?
Yes, Ira?
Have you got any ideas on what's happening to us?
Well, man experiences incidents, gathers knowledge, knows emotions. Then, as he grows older, he begins to forget those experiences, forget that knowledge. That's what life is, a long series of forgettings. Here on Nine, in some impossible way, the forgetting is speeded up. It happens overnight.
No, there's more to it than that. Well, I'm going back to my cabin to try and get some rest.
Hey, you, Ira?
It's me, Bad Ears.
What gives?
We're in a jam.
There's been planets I wouldn't mind being marooned on, you know. But this ain't one of them. There's something here, Ira. I can feel it.
Yes, I can feel it myself. Maybe we should have looked around more.
Klein looked around. Klein was the one who found that tower.
Brady, that's right. She did.
She said she didn't like it. She said it scared her.
In the morning, Bad Ears, we'll go and see that tower. In the morning, I took Doc and MacGyver and Brady with me, and we walked across the valley to the stone tower. It wasn't much of a tower, only 8 or 9 feet high, made of rocks piled one on top of another.
Pretty solid, well built, and odd. Type F culture, I'd say.
Has anybody bothered to look inside this thing? MacGyver, you were here with Klein yesterday.
Yes, sir. We couldn't find a way in, Captain. Klein poked around, but gave up.
Well, we'll make a way in. Stand back. I think I can shoot the top off it. Now, that should be big enough for a man to lower himself into. Okay, fasten a rope around my shoulders.
Captain.
Yes?
In case there's anything, well, dangerous, maybe I ought to go. After all, I'm survey engineer.
MacIver's right, Ira.
Okay, Mac. Your responsibility.
Yes, sir. Just fasten the rope onto my arms. That's it. Now, I'll climb up and lower myself in. If I pull twice, haul me out. One pull means okay. Give me a hand, Brady, huh?
How about a quick shot of whiskey first?
Never touch it. All right, now.
Can you see inside?
Black as a tomb. I'm going to lower myself. Pay out a little rope. Well, it's been lovely. Here we go.
One tug. He's on the ground inside.
I wonder what he's found.
I still don't like it.
Oh, Brady, there's probably not a thing in there except a few... There's two tugs. Three. Come on, haul him out.
You mean?
Come on, just haul him out.
Brady, pull him through the top.
Right. Easy now, Mac. What the heck is in there, anyway? Mac!
Dada?
Holy jumping asteroids, Doc! He's flipped!
No, he hasn't lost his mind. He's just reverted to babyhood.
We stood there at the foot of the tower, stunned. MacIver sat on the ground, happy as a clam, playing with his fingers and talking happy little nonsense syllables. Doc, take a look at him. Make sure he's okay physically. What is it?
I've forgotten what the normal pulse rate is.
Doc, let's get out of here. Brady, pick up MacGyver and bring him back to the ship. Come on! Let's get away from this tower. A few minutes later, Brady and I sat in the captain's quarters. He didn't do much talking. Just sat and tipped his bottle to his lips every so often. Well, at least we know in a general way what we're up against.
Do we?
We know that there has been knowledge lost. Important information forgotten. Now that memory, that lost skill, that knowledge went somewhere. Maybe there is something in that tower that takes it away. And I have a silly feeling we might even get it back.
Have a drink.
Bad Ears, get a couple of crew. Volunteers, now.
Now? What for?
We're going to find out what's inside that tower. We lowered an infrared movie camera into the tower, took some pictures, and went back to the ship for a look. There was something in there, all right.
Now, as far as we can determine, this thing we photographed is shaped like a watermelon standing on end. The movement of the hairs all over it suggests vibrations, such as an antenna of an insect. Underneath are wires leading to terminals that seem to be plugged right into the thing.
Do you think it's a form of life?
My guess is a combination of living organism and machine. After all, man and machines work together. The difference is that man retains his individual identity.
Well, since it doesn't locomote, someone or something must have put it there.
Exactly.
It looks like some kind of communication organism.
If it is, it's a communication machine that is built to take in information rather than pass it along.
Do you really think that egg in there has been stealing our memory?
Why not?
Well, because it's too wild. That's why not.
It's no wilder than a lot of things we've found. Say that the egg is a device for gathering knowledge.
But there's no knowledge here to gather. I mean, how often does a ship land on an out-of-the-way melon like this?
Wait a minute, Brady. Who says that knowledge has to be collected here?
Huh?
I said, why do we assume that knowledge has to be collected right here on Planet 9? We forget things back on Earth, don't we?
Oh, good Lord.
Suppose you were some race setting out fish traps for knowledge and had plenty of time to gather it. Where would you put your traps? On a planet swarming with intelligent beings where the traps would be found and destroyed or their secrets snatched away? Or would you put them on some second-rate world where nobody would ever bother them?
I'd pick a spot just like this.
Let me fill in this picture, Doc. I think that some unknown race is bent on trapping knowledge throughout the galaxy.
Ira, if what you say is true, if it is, then every time someone on Earth forgets something, it's because one of these eggs has drained it out of him.
Well?
I just can't believe it. It's too fantastic.
Have you got a better guess?
No.
The question is, what do we do next? If anybody gets near that egg, he winds up like some pulling little baby.
You were pretty near it that first day. Did you forget anything?
How should I know? I was too pleasantly lit up on grain spurts to know the difference.
Well, the question is still, what now?
I'm going outside to think. I stood out on the platform of the ship and tried to make some sort of pattern out of it. Forgetfulness. That was the key word. All through the galaxy and every culture there was forgetfulness. There were lots of learned theories, of course. Kinks in the brain, neuroses, data processing. But suppose they were wrong. Might it not be that forgetfulness was caused by thousands upon thousands of these memory traps planted throughout the galaxy? Nibbling away at the conscious memory of all the sentient beings that lived among the stars. On Earth, a man forgets slowly because the traps are far away. But here, in their very shadow, a man forgets suddenly. And then another thought entered my mind. What kind of race had set these traps? How do they empty them? How? Brady.
Huh?
Where do you keep your liquor?
Now, Chief.
Come on. Where?
It's in my locker.
Get it out of there. All of it.
Ira.
That's a direct order.
Okay.
All of it. That it?
Yeah, I never thought I'd see the day when you pulled rank on me, Ira. If you confiscate this stuff, so help me, I'll never forgive you.
Who said anything about confiscating? Bad ears, have you ever really hung one on? I mean, just pie-eyed drunk.
Well, let's see. There was once on Mars. Took me 3 days to sober up. They say I fought off the whole Galactic Patrol for hours.
Well,
it was beautiful.
Do you think you've got enough here to get that polluted again?
I got a pretty good supply, Ira.
Well, that's good. Because in 1 minute, I'm going to give you a direct order to hang on the biggest, most monstrous drunk in the entire history of the universe. But first, you have to volunteer.
I volunteer.
No. Not until I explain why I'm doing this.
Ira, this sort of project don't need reasons. It's a pleasure.
You know that egg up in the tower?
Yeah?
The minute you get near it, it grabs your mind. Wipes it clean, right?
Yeah.
And a lead space helmet doesn't shield you.
Right.
Now, Doc thinks this egg is some kind of communications thing.
Yeah, it must be.
Okay. You're a communications man. What do you do when you can't shield a communication?
Well, that's easy. You scramble it. Any fool knows... Wait.
Exactly. Are you still game?
Do you think it'll work?
I don't know. I think it might.
But suppose it doesn't.
You're a babbling infant like Klein and MacGyver.
If we don't stop that thing, it'll happen anyway.
Unless we can remember how to start the engines.
Okay, Ira, I'll do it. When do I start?
Right now.
Well, Ira, here's Mutt and your ever-loving intergalactic eyeballs. You know something? I'm beginning to like this mission already.
Well, that kills the last bottle.
How am I doing now, old buddy? Buddy. Palawan.
Not drunk enough. I should have picked somebody like Doc. Except she'd probably pass out.
Not drunk enough, old buddy, old pal, Ira. Not drunk enough, old buddy, old pal.
Not yet.
Well, in that case, old buddy, I'm gonna have to do something I never likes to have to do.
What's that?
I'm gonna have to get into my special emergency reserve supplies. A little supply I keep in case I get my own on a planet, you know. I don't like to go into it, but in this case, it's my duties. It's my duty. I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. Heck of an engineer. Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. Hank of an engineer. Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. You know, heck of an engineer. Blast off!
Okay, I guess you're ready. What do you think, Doc?
The most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Is he drunk enough?
What I want to know is what's keeping him conscious.
Like all the
okay, bad ears. On your feet. Help him up, Doc.
Let's go, bad ears.
Oh, if I had a daughter, so I'd...
Somehow, we pushed, hauled, and stumbled Bat Ears Brady out of the ship and up the rocks to the egg tower. We erected a tripod over the hole with a block and tackle, passed a rope around Brady's chest, and hauled him over the entrance of the tower. There he swung like some overstuffed pig, singing raucously under the eerie moonlight.
Well, what do you say, Ira?
Got the earphones on him so they can't slip off?
They're on.
Guess we're ready to lower it.
Ira.
Yeah?
You sure? It's a man's life.
I'm not sure, Doc. But as commander of this expedition, I sometimes have to risk the lives of my men.
Okay, Ira.
her away before I get too sober. Lower her away. Blast off. Fire one. Fire two. Bon voyage.
Good luck, Brady. Good luck.
He's at the bottom, Ira.
Bad ears. Can you hear me?
Get your hands out of my hand. This guy's got his hands in my hair, Ira.
The thing must be picking at his brain. Brady, listen to me. Do you see the egg?
See it? That's my buddy, Ira. That's my little old egghead buddy. Yours and me's buddies, egghead, right? Extra special emergency. Emergency reserves. Here, a little drink.
Oh, good Lord, he's got a bottle with him. He's pouring it on the egg. Brady, listen to me. The wires.
Wires?
Pull out the studs on the egg and hook your wires to it. You got that?
Yeah. And just a minute. Me and Egg here got to have a drink.
Oh, it's no use, Ira. He's too drunk to know what he's doing.
I'll try again. Brady, listen. Your friend, the egg, can't hear you, see? He can't have a drink with you until you hook your wires into him. You got that?
Sure, that's an awful thing. That's dreadful. Okay.
What's he doing? Doc, you getting any impulses?
Not a thing.
Maybe we better haul him out. If he starts to sober up...
Maybe we'd better.
Okay. One. Two.
Wait a minute. Wait. I'm getting something, Ira. This is fantastic.
Haul him out, quick.
Right. Come on. Come on.
Brady. You all right? Doc, help me. Take a look at him. Is he okay?
Yes, he's okay. Just passed out. Not surprising.
Let's get him back to the ship.
Right. You know what, Ira?
What?
Tomorrow, about 9 a.m., we're going to be in on the most colossal hangover in the history of Mornings After.
We were in on more than Doc Spencer had bargained for. More than any human being had any business being on. Well, Brady, how do you feel?
Shoot me. Shoot all me.
You turned the trick.
Trick?
The tower. You hooked into the egg. The stuff is rolling out now. Doc and the boys have got a recording hooked up. The stuff they're listening in on is enough to set your teeth on edge.
What? What stuff?
The information that Mind Trap has been collecting for hundreds of years. It will take us years to sort it out, but we are getting some of it straight already.
Any of our own stuff?
Plenty.
Anything on engines?
Well, not on our engines.
So?
We got the dope on the junkyard anyway. Mac and the boys are hoping to put something together so we can rip out our own engines and just keep some of the parts.
Another junkyard, huh?
Another junkyard. The engine we're building now is superior to anything ever built.
Pretty handy little gadget, that egg. Only one thing.
What's that?
Tell Doc, if he comes across a good hangover remedy, to let me know. Ugh.
It took us about 6 days to assemble the new engines using some of our parts and some of the advanced designs from the junkyard. During most of that time, Doc Spencer sat down at the tower with a set of headphones, monitoring the information from the egg. She was like a woman possessed. I didn't think anything unnatural was happening until the night of the sixth day. Well, that does it. The boys have got the engines ready for takeoff. And there's a full moon, too.
Well, we should be able to lift her off by tomorrow morning, huh?
We're blasting off in exactly 1 minute.
What?
In exactly 1 minute.
But Ira, Doc and some of the techno boys are down there monitoring the egg.
I know it.
Well, it'll take them 20 minutes to get back to the ship with all that equipment.
They're not getting back.
Huh?
I said they're not getting back.
Ira, are you nuts?
Come here, Bad Ears. I want you to take a look through this field scope. You can get a good close-up of Doc and the boys who have been monitoring that egg.
Wait until I get it focused.
Got him?
Yeah.
Take a close-up.
Mother in heaven!
You see why we have to leave them here?
Those faces, they're like some kind of beast. What is it, Ira? What happened to them?
The same thing that must have happened to the crew of the last ship that touched here. The same thing that made them blast out of here in such a tearing hurry.
What?
Bad Ears, there isn't only knowledge in that thing. Those boys are monitoring something else.
Something else?
Personalities, Bad Ears. They're not human anymore. They're turning alien. They were still there when the ship roared up and away from Planet 9 and pointed her silver nose toward Earth. We could see them in the scopes, a group of tiny figures crouched over the recording equipment, their earphones plugged into the egg. They didn't even look up when we blasted off. They were no longer human now. They were something else. Something a million light years old, and of another world.
Our cast in this reproduction of X-1, The Junkyard, in order of appearance, Mark Kalita, Stevie K. Farnaby, Bill Holwig, Tanya Milojevich, Elaine Barrett. Music provided by Tunguska Electronic Music Society. Theme music provided by Roger Sabura Mehta, both available on jamindo.com. Sound effects not created by the producer were provided by Free Sound Project and the cavernous collective vaults of the Brothers Kaboom. This is your producer and host, Carrie Ayers, hoping that you'll join us again on another recreation of X-1.
Welcome back to the Swagcast Junkyard from X-1. Hope you enjoy tonight, and here's Carrie Ayers.
What can I say? This was a project that took longer than I anticipated for it to. I learned a lot, and it taught me how not only the equipment works, but how people work in a way that I had not realized. I tend to be bossy, pushy person, and one thing that I learned right away is that for any of these people to feel comfortable enough to do this project, you gotta back off, you gotta ask, you gotta be nice. And so I learned a little bit of interaction as well as acting on all this. The truth of the matter is that the real difference, I don't know, I guess the real difference between those, other than the fact that the war of the sexes had taken place between the time that X-1 was done and the time that we are doing our recording in the 21st century, I guess the only other thing is the fact that we have come to accept that there is an alternative way of seeing and doing things, not necessarily something we're always aware of. How do you put that another way, Carrie? Well, back in the 1950s, the idea of using alcohol to short-circuit your brain enough to be able to have somebody do something, that was a pretty wild concept. I mean, the idea of alcohol helping you when it was done to that extent was definitely not something that was of the norm back then. It wasn't that it was considered as detrimental as we consider it nowadays, but it was definitely not something to where it was considered an enhancement unit. So I think, but back then it was a wild concept about the fact that something could steal your memories, you know, steal your thoughts. They didn't even have really a way of describing it. And yet now here in our modern idea, you know, the idea of somebody taking your memory, somebody switching lives, stuff like that. I mean, it's something that happens in almost every single television show on the air. So maybe that's the one thing that's changed, is that we've thought about the idea of identity and about memory and about thoughts being something that is a commodity, literally. Back then, thoughts were thoughts. Yeah, you could do something with them, and whatever you did with them was the result. Nowadays, thoughts themselves are the result, and we're getting more into that area. So I think that would be a part of it. Another part of it, there was a lot of, and that was something that was always the fun thing about science fiction back in the 50s, is there was a real gee whiz attitude about it. Like, gosh, wow, now we're going to do this. Now we're going to go over here and see that. And, ooh, what's that over there? We lost that when Ridley Scott introduced us to an alien that was meaner than us and nothing like us. After that, there was a lot of shows beforehand that had done stuff, but no, that one I think is the one that was the turning point. After that, something alien could not be just dangerous. It could be outright completely horrific. And I don't think that was something that they had as a concept back then. The idea of stealing your memories, stealing your thoughts at a distance, is spooky. I think it's very spooky. We're in a world now where a lot of people are dealing with it on a daily basis. Alzheimer's is something that's in my own family, as a matter of fact. And so the worry about not remembering something as I grow older has become more of a concern, a thought, not a fear, because fear just attracts it to you. But it is always something I'm concerned and conscious of now. And so I guess that's another thing about this whole show, is the reason why I wanted to do it. One thing I haven't approached yet on this, and this is where I was supposed to start with, and this is going to really give Bill a good giggle here, because I know he's editing this and we'll have a lot of fun with it, because it's not my project to edit this time. Why did I do this? Not necessarily a question anybody's asked me. Well, actually, I've been asking it, and my wife has been asking me why I'm doing it. Because I got very, very obsessive at one point doing this and was not doing hardly anything else. It was not good. I went overboard. But why would I produce something? Why would I go ahead and say, yeah, let's go ahead and let's do this? I guess the reason why is because, quite frankly, there have been very few shows in the past in American radio that really turned me around. There have been some really phenomenal science fiction shows, Stars and Stuff by ZBS Media being a major one. The Star Wars NPS, or that was done with NPR, rather, with National Public Radio, that Lucasfilm did of the original three films. And if anybody out there has gone, what? Star Wars? Radio plays? Go and listen to them. It'll astound you, especially when you realize that they were all done well before episodes 1, 2, and 3 were ever going to be put on film. And you'll hear some references to things that make even more eerie sense now with the new movies. And this is all done by a guy by the name of Brian Daley that is unfortunately no longer with us. But his scripting was astounding. And I think anybody who has not heard it should hear it. But Stars and Stuff, Star Wars, and X-1 from the 1950s. I've been listening to a lot of BBC radio, and I've been a big fan of it. I'm a big Goon Show fanatic. Iserta, for anybody over there who knows what I'm talking about, I'm sorry, I'll read that again. And that's the way it actually is stated. It's one of the first shows that John Cleese was in. Great radio stuff. amazing stuff. And fantasy and science fiction was something that they were, you know, the Americans and the Europeans were very much toying with in radio. It was something that just seemed to fit with it. So sci-fi shows were a lot out there. However, The Planet Man versus X Minus One, if I can do another contrast comparison here, a lot of the science fiction that was being produced was very juvenile-based stuff. It was not aimed at a thinking audience necessarily, but then again, you know, back in those days, they weren't sure what was going on, you know, who would listen to what. And so I can understand why they probably were just aiming for what they thought was their market that they could get. And therefore, a lot of it was more of the juvenile fiction style situations, the more the ray gun type situation. But X Minus One seemed to always rise above that. It had ray guns, but the person using it, why they were using it, what was the motivation, stuff like that, it was not as cut and dry as it was when you were dealing with, you know, like Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon or anything like that. There was more questioning. There was more who's really right here going on. And I think that was due to the fact that they were pulling their stories from Galaxy Magazine. That was the beginnings for Isaac Asimov, the early works that Ray Bradbury was doing, that would become later the Martian Chronicles. There's just so much there. Theodore Sturgeon, just Robert Heinlein. I mean, all these amazing masters of science fiction. Their stories were sometimes first done on X Minus One, and done well. I mean, when you listen to these things, I mean, you know, listening to ours to theirs, you know, in some ways, theirs sounds a little better. I mean, it you know, even with all the technology we have, because it gives you the real feel for it. You get the real feel of the suspense and the mystery, and any lack of that in our copy is purely my fault, not my actors, nobody else's fault, just mine. I really do think, though, that X Minus One was one of those kind of shows that really, for me, switched me on to science fiction. It brought me into science fiction. And I just the minute Bill said, hey, we're going to do an X Minus One, and we thought maybe you'd like to produce it, and we're wanting to do The Junkyard, which is absolutely one of my favorite episodes of the show, I said yes immediately. Well, not immediately. I thought about it, but I didn't take as long to think about it as I do other things. I did say yes with a heart that was set to say, hey, this is going to be fun. This is going to be something I always enjoyed as a kid, something I still listen to, and it'd be kind of neat to do a take on it. The sound effects and the music, I guess, is another thing that's very different. The musical cues that were on the original script were very good at giving you an idea of how basic the idea was back then of the music playing and interplaying in the story as being something for atmosphere and effect. It was there to add atmosphere and effect. Yep, we still use it to that effect. But I think that back then it was more, everything was separate. Whereas now the sound, the music, the sound effect are all supposed to sound integrated. They're all supposed to sound together. They're not supposed to be separate entities like parts of an orchestra. They're supposed to be all from one voice almost. So that is, I think, a change that has happened. Back then it was a symphony. Now it's more like a multi-harmonic solo voice. And what's good or bad, I don't know. What's worse, I don't know if I don't think you can quantify it that way. I think it's just a situation where the technology has changed everything. Another thing that's changed, of course, is the caliber of people that are wanting to do the shows. Back then, let's be honest, it was professionals that were being paid to do what they were doing, and nowadays it's enthusiasts. It's people that want to do it because they really have a love for this. And I think it shows a difference. I think there's a lot more heart in this kind of a production than was in the original productions, just because of the fact that yeah, we weren't just showing up to do this. We all took the time to do this individually, and we all took our own time to do it. We weren't getting paid. We weren't getting anything other than the satisfaction of trying to do something that would be fun and hoping that the end result would be fun for somebody else to hear. I guess that's a good place to leave it. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it a lot. I will be doing more projects down the line. This has been fun. I don't know how else to put it. It's just, I don't know how to contrast these. I'm sorry, Bill. Contrast. One was made in the 50s. One's made in the 21st century. We've covered about all the other bases I can think of. Well, guys, just don't let the watermelon eggs get to your brain. Don't let them get to your memories. And keep an extra fifth of Jack around just in case so that you can scramble those waves. I would like to thank everybody who participated in this. I would like to thank Tanya Milovich for adding in a great contrast in her own right, in her acting, being such a, you know, sounding like a cadet that is so stiff that even her collars were completely starched to where they could cut diamonds, and then going to a complete child at that. I thought she did a great job. Elaine Barrett, one of the most easygoing, relaxed actresses I know of, because it just flows out of her. It's just great. Stevie K. Farnaby, what can I say, man? For a guy that's all the way over there in England, you did a great take on trying to be a gee whiz young kid crew member. Bill Hulwig. Bill, what can I say, man? This guy went through singing I'm a Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech somewhere around 12 times, and sent me almost all of the takes. And I thank him for doing it. He even said, "Carrie, I don't sing." It was one of the first things that came up in the email. And I said, "Hey, can you sing Ramblin' Rose again for me?" And he said, "I don't sing, Carrie, I don't sing." So he overcame a couple of things to do that for me, and I thought it was just terrific. I think he did a great job with it. And that brings us to our commander, Mark Kalita. What can you say? The man asked me one sentence. He just said, "What are you looking for? What kind of sound do you want out of the commander?" And I just said, "I wanted a tired PT boat commander, like from World War II. And he nailed it. I mean, that was exactly what I was looking for, what he put out there. So, guys, all of you, thank you very much for taking the time to do this. And I want to thank all of our audience right now for listening to us. I hope you had fun. And look forward to having you hear us again real soon. You take care. Have a good one. Bye.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, when you hear the hearty laugh and familiar voice of the great Gildersleeve tomorrow night, you know you're in for some hilarious adventures. Because wherever a Gildy is around, why, somehow things never seem to go as planned. It might be his impulsive nature, or maybe it's his incurable weakness for the fairer sex. But whatever it is, the great Gildersleeve is bound to keep you laughing for a full 30 minutes. Tune in tomorrow night and meet Judge Hooker, Nephew Leroy, Housekeeper Bertie, and all the rest of the friendly people from Somerville as they join the great Gildersleeve. And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight's story, Junkyard, by Clifford D. Simak.
The funny thing about the whole thing was the fact that we had never intended to land on Planet 9. We circled it and decided it was strictly a low-grade affair. It wouldn't amount to anything for a billion years or so. As commander of a galactic survey team, I couldn't waste my time on it. Then my exec saw this junkyard through the telescope. We landed. Took a look at a load of alien machine parts discarded by some other spaceship, and then prepared to take off for Earth. It had all been a waste of time.
Engine room, MacIver.
This is Commander Warren. All secure?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Countdown for blastoff.
Engine room ready, sir.
X minus 5. Minus 4. Minus 3. Minus 2. Minus 1. Fire. Mac, what's wrong down there?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Brady, get the data analyzer ready. We'll have to correct for a new takeoff time.
That's the first time I ever heard of engine failure before takeoff.
Well, better before than after. Engine room?
Yes, sir.
What's happening? You boys ready yet?
No, sir.
Well, burn it, man. Get going. I want those engines started.
Sir.
What is it?
I don't quite know what to say.
Well, say something or I'll have you busted.
We can't start the engines, Commander. At least I can.
Well, why not?
I don't know.
Klein, put Klein on.
Lieutenant Klein, sir.
Lieutenant, what is going on down there? Is there something wrong with the engines?
No, sir. I've double-checked them.
Well, then let's get them heated up or we'll be on this godforsaken planet the rest of our lives.
We can't do it, sir.
Klein, suppose you tell me exactly why you can't start the engines. Can you do that?
Yes, sir.
All right, why?
Because, sir, we can't remember how.
What?
Yes, sir, we've forgotten how to start the engine.
Lieutenant, report up here in 1 minute. Bring Dr. Spencer with you.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brady, where have you got it?
Got what, Iron?
Don't play innocent. You and I have been doing planet surveys together for 15 years. You carry enough dead weight in grain alcohol on every trip to keep you happy for a million light years. Now, obviously, the boys in the engine room have gotten into it.
Impossible.
Where is it?
I got a few fists in my locker, but nobody's touched it. I checked a few minutes ago.
Well, then somebody has got some in the engine room. Come in.
Lieutenant Klein, sir, I brought Dr. Spencer as ordered.
Hello, Doc. Did Klein here tell you what's going on?
He did.
How long will it take you to get these guys sobered up?
I can't.
Why not?
Because they're not drunk. I tested Klein in my office.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Are you trying to get me to actually believe that these men, intergalactic engineers with years of hyperfission experience, have forgotten how to start the engines of this ship?
That's right.
You're serious?
Dead serious, Ira. Something, somehow, has caused these men to forget how to start the engines.
There it was. It fit in perfectly with a lot of other annoying little things that had been happening to us ever since we put down on Planet 9. It was to have been a routine exploration of a low-grade, uninhabited planet. Some routine exploration. All right, Klein, now listen to me. Do you have manuals aboard? Engineering manuals?
Yes, sir.
Take the engine room boys and study those manuals. They'll tell you how to start the ship, won't they?
Yes, sir.
Okay, get going. Doc, I'd like you to stay here with me and Brady for a minute.
Okay.
Report back to me, Klein.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Doc, you're supposed to be an expert on space medicine. What is it?
I've never seen anything like it, Ira.
Brady?
Search me, Captain. I've seen them with space blues, alien psychoses, the works. But I've never seen a disease that could make a crew forget how to start the engines.
Maybe it isn't a disease.
Okay, what then?
Maybe it's a deliberate thing.
You mean they're faking?
No, I know Klein and the others too well for that. I mean, maybe there's some outside influence.
Doc, we've surveyed this planet from top to bottom. We know there isn't a living cell on it.
What about the junkyard?
What junkyard?
Oh, he means that pile of rusty space engine parts we found. The boys nicknamed it the junkyard.
He's right. Somebody put it there.
Well, we know that another spaceship landed here. We know that from the blast marks on the rock. We know that for some unexplained reason, they took their engine apart and tried to put it together again. We know they succeeded in building a much simpler engine, leaving a lot of spare parts, and we know that they took off. The blast-off marks tell us that, too.
What we don't know is whether or not they left somebody behind, or something.
What about that stone tower, Ira?
The boys looked it over. It's just a pile of stones. They probably threw them together as a shelter while they were rebuilding their engine.
Oh, that sounds too simple.
I don't like that tower, Ira.
Why not?
I don't know. It was scary. It had that black look about it. The smell of death. I felt it when I walked past with Klein and MacIver.
Oh, that's the Celt in you, banshees and spooks.
I still don't like it. I need a drink.
Skip it. We should be ready to blast off in a few minutes. Engine room. Engine room. What's going on down there? Engine room. Lieutenant Klein.
Daddy. Is that you, Daddy? Did you bring me a present? Daddy, I'm scared.
Holy mackerel, that's Klein. He's gone off his rocker. Klein! Doc, I think we better get down to that engine room. When Doc examined Klein, he found him to have the mind and memory of a 6-year-old.
That's it, Ira. Something drained Klein of his memory. And that's as much as I can tell you.
That's a big help.
Here's the manual he was reading.
Well, at least we can follow this manual and get off this stinking planet. Could you hand it to me?
Right here. Anything wrong, Ira? Is it all there?
It's all here, Doc. This is the engine manual that tells all about the engines. How they operate, how to locate trouble, how to fix them, how to start them.
Well, what is it then? You're sweating like a pig.
All of a sudden, I can't remember the symbols. Doc, I've forgotten how to read. I left the engine room and went out through the lock to stand on the outside platform of the ship. I looked over the junkyard where the metal of the rusted engine parts gleamed. There was a riddle there. A riddle we hadn't been able to figure out. Why had an alien spaceship landed here, ripped out its engines, and then put together a simple, less efficient engine, and taken off again? And they had worked in an awful hurry, judging by the mess they left. Why? Why?
Mind if I join you, Ira?
No, help yourself, Doc. How's Klein?
We've made him some toys. He's playing with them. I've assigned Mac to see that he doesn't hurt himself.
Doc.
Yes?
Have you got any ideas on what's happening to us?
Well, man experiences incidents, gathers knowledge, knows emotions. Then, as he grows older, he begins to forget those experiences, forget that knowledge. That's what life is, a long series of forgettings. Here, on 9, in some impossible way, the forgetting is speeded up. It happens overnight.
No, there's more to it than that. Well, I'm going back to my cabin and try to get some rest.
That you, Ira?
That's me, Batters.
What gives?
We're in a jam.
There's been planets I wouldn't mind being marooned on, you know. But this ain't one of them. There's something here, Ira. I can feel it.
Yes, I can feel it myself. Maybe we should have looked around more.
Klein looked around. Klein was the one found that tower.
Bertie, that's right. He did.
He said he didn't like it. He said it scared him.
In the morning, Bad Ears, we'll go and see that tower. In the morning, I took Doc and MacIver and Brady with me, and we walked across the valley to the stone tower. It wasn't much of a tower. Maybe 8 or 9 feet high, made of rocks piled one on top of the other.
Pretty solid. Well built and odd. Type F culture, I'd say.
Did anybody bother to look inside this thing? MacIver, you were here with Klein yesterday.
Yes, sir. We couldn't find a way in, Captain. Klein poked around but gave up.
Well, we'll make a way in. Stand back. I think I can shoot the top off it. Oh, now that should be big enough for a man to lower himself into. Okay, pass a rope around my shoulders.
Captain.
Yes?
In case there's anything, well, dangerous, maybe I ought to go. After all, I'm survey engineer.
MacIver's right, Ira.
Okay, Mac, your responsibility.
Yes, sir. Just fasten the rope under my arms.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Now, I'll climb up and lower myself in. If I pull twice, haul me out. One pull means okay. Give me a hand, Brady. Huh?
How about a quick shot of whiskey first?
Never touch it. Ready?
Yep. Can you see inside?
Black as a tomb. I'm going to lower myself. Pay out a little rope. Well, it's been lovely. Here we go.
One tug. He's on the ground inside.
Yeah, I wonder what he's found.
I still don't like it.
Oh, Brady, there's probably not a thing in there except a few... There's two tugs. Three. Come on, haul him out.
Heave! Brady, help him through the top.
Right. Easy now, Mac. What the heck is in there, anyway? Mac? Mac?
Dada? Dada?
Holy jumping asteroids. Doc, he's flipped.
No, he hasn't lost his mind. He's just reverted to babyhood.
We stood there at the foot of the tower, stunned. MacIver sat on the ground, happy as a clam, playing with his fingers and talking happy little nonsense syllables. Doc, take a look at him. Make sure that he's okay physically.
Check. If it's fright, his pulse will be way up. Mac, let me have your hand. That's a good fellow. Now. Good heavens.
What is it?
I've forgotten what the normal pulse rate is. Pulse. Pulse?
Doc, let's get out of here. Brady, pick up MacIver and bring him back to the ship. Come on, let's get away from this tower. A few minutes later, Brady and I sat in the captain's quarters. He didn't do much talking, just sat and tipped his bottle to his lips ever so often. Well, at least we know in a general way what we're up against.
Do we?
We know there's been knowledge lost, important information forgotten.
Check.
Now, that memory, that lost skill, that knowledge went somewhere. Maybe there's something in that tower that takes it away. And I have a silly feeling we might even get it back.
Have a drink.
Bad ears. Get a couple of men, volunteers.
Now?
Now.
What for?
We're going to find out what's inside that tower. We lowered a rotating infrared movie camera into the tower, took some pictures, and went back to the ship for a look. There was something in there, all right.
Now, as far as we can determine, this thing we photographed is shaped like a watermelon standing on end. The movement of the hairs all over it suggests vibrations, such as an antenna of an insect. Underneath are wires leading to terminals that seemed plugged right into the thing.
You think it's a form of life?
My guess is a combination of living organism and machine. After all, man and machines work together. The difference is that man retains his individual identity.
Well, since it doesn't locomote, somebody or something must have put it there.
Exactly.
It looks like some kind of communication organism.
If it is, it's a communication machine that is built to take in information rather than pass it along.
Doc, do you really think that egg in there has been stealing our memory?
Why not?
Well, because it's too wild, that's why not.
It's no wilder than a lot of other things we found. Say that that egg is a device for gathering knowledge.
But there's no knowledge here to gather. I mean, how often does a ship land on an out-of-the-way melon like this?
Wait a minute, Brady. Who says that knowledge has to be collected here?
What?
I said, why do we assume that knowledge has to be collected right here on Planet Nine? We forget things back on Earth, don't we?
Good Lord.
Suppose you were some race setting out fish traps for knowledge, and you had plenty of time to gather it. Where would you put your traps? On a planet swarming with intelligent beings where the traps would be found and destroyed or their secrets snatched away? Or would you put them out on some second-rate world where nobody would ever bother them?
Good heavens, I'd pick a spot just like this.
Let me fill in this picture, Doc. I think that some unknown race is bent on trapping knowledge throughout the galaxy.
Ira, if what you say is true, if it is, then every time someone on Earth forgets something, it's because one of these eggs has drained it out of him.
Well?
It's too fantastic.
Have you got a better guess?
No.
The question is, what do we do next? If anybody gets near that egg, he winds up like some puling little baby.
You were pretty near it that first day. Did you forget anything?
Well, how should I know? I was too pleasantly lit up on grain spirits to know the difference.
Well, the question is still, what now?
I'm going outside to think.
Ira.
Yes?
There is one thing to keep in mind.
What is that, Doc?
If those are memory traps, then there must be a way for somebody to empty them. And if we're ever going to get away from here, what's gone in has got to come out.
I stood out on the platform of the ship and tried to make some sort of pattern of it. Forgetfulness. That was the key word. All through the galaxy, in every culture, there was forgetfulness. There were lots of learned theories, of course, kinks in the brain, neuroses, data processing. But suppose they were wrong. Might it not be that forgetfulness was caused by thousands upon thousands of these memory traps planted throughout the galaxy, nibbling away at the conscious memory of all the sentient beings that lived among the stars? On Earth, a man forgets slowly because the traps are far away. But here, in their very shadow, a man forgets suddenly. And then another thought entered my mind. What kind of race had set these traps? How did they empty them?
How?
How?
Brady!
Huh?
Where do you keep your liquor?
Not cheap.
Come on, where?
It's in my locker.
Get it out of there, all of it.
Ira...
That's a direct order.
Okay. All of it.
That it?
Yeah. I never thought I'd see the day when you pulled rank on me, Ira. If you confiscate this stuff, so help me, I'll never forget.
Who said anything about confiscating? That is, have you ever really hung one on? I mean, just got pie-eyed drunk?
Let's see. There was once on Mars.
Was that the worst?
It was beautiful. Took me 3 days to sober up. They say I fought off the whole galactic patrol for hours.
Well, do you think you got enough here to get that polluted again?
I got a pretty good supply, Ira.
Well, that's good, because in 1 minute, I'm going to give you a direct order to hang on the biggest, most monstrous drunk in the entire history of the universe. But first you have to volunteer.
I volunteer.
No, not until I explain why I'm doing this.
Ira, this sort of project don't need reasons. It's a pleasure.
Let me finish. You know that egg up in the tower?
Yeah?
The minute you get near it, it grabs your mind, wipes it clean, right?
Yeah.
And a lead space helmet doesn't shield you, as we saw with MacIver.
Right.
Now, Doc thinks this egg is a kind of communications thing.
It must be.
Okay, you're a communications man. What do you do when you can't shield a communication?
Well, that's easy. You scramble it. Any fool knows. Holy mackerel.
Exactly. Are you still game?
You think it'll work?
I don't know. I think it might.
Well, suppose it doesn't.
You'd be a babbling infant like Klein and MacIver.
If we don't stop that thing, it'll happen anyway.
Unless we can remember how to start the engines.
Okay, Ira. I'll do it. When do I start?
Right now.
Well, Ira, here's mud in your ever-loving intergalactic eyeballs. You know something? I'm beginning to like this mission already.
Well, that kills the last bottle.
How am I doing, our old buddy?
You're not drunk enough. I should have picked somebody like Doc, except he'd probably pass out.
I'm not drunk enough, huh, old buddy pal?
Not yet.
Well, then, in which case, old buddy, I'm going to have to do something I never like to have to do.
What's that?
I'm going to have to go into my extra special emergency reserve supply. It's a little supply I keep in case of getting marooned on a planet, you know? I don't like to go into it. But in this case, it's my duty. I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a heck of an engineer. A rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a heck of an engineer. Woo! Blast off!
Okay, I guess you're ready. What do you think, Doc?
Most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Is he drunk enough?
What I want to know is what's keeping him conscious.
Okay, Bad Ears, on your feet. Help him up, Doc.
Right. Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
Let's go, Bad Ears.
Right. Rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, we pushed, hauled, and stumbled Bad Ears Brady out of the ship and up the rocks to the egg tower. We erected a tripod over the hole with a block and tackle, passed a rope around Brady's chest, and hauled him over the entrance to the tower. There he swung like some overstuffed pig, singing raucously under the eerie moonlight.
Ramblin' wreck from Georgia Tech.
Well, what do you say, Ira? We got the earphones on him so they can't slip off.
They're on.
Well, I guess we're ready to lower him.
Ira.
Yep.
You sure? It's a man's life.
I'm not sure, Doc. But as commander of this expedition, I sometimes have to risk the lives of my men.
Okay, Ira.
Lower away before I start to get sober. Lower away. Blast off. Fire one. Fire two. Bon voyage, Ira.
Good luck, Brady. Good luck.
He's at the bottom, Ira.
Yeah. Bad Ears, can you hear me?
Get your hands out of my hair. Something's got his hands in my hair, Ira.
Oh, the thing must be picking at his brain. Brady, listen to me. Do you see the egg?
See, yeah, that's my buddy, Ira. My little old egghead buddy. You and me buddies, egghead, right? Haven't
you? Oh, good Lord, he's got a bottle with him. He's pouring it on the egg. Brady, listen to me. The wires.
Wires?
The lead wires you took in with you.
Yeah.
Pull out the studs on the egg and hook your wires to it. You got that?
Just a minute. Me and egg is gonna have a drink.
Oh, good heavens. It's no use, Ira. He's too drunk to know what he's doing.
I'll try again. Brady, listen. Your friend, the egg, can't hear you, see? He can't have a drink until you hook your wires into him. You got that?
Sure. That's an awful thing. That's dreadful. Okay.
What's he doing? Doc, you getting any impulses?
Not a thing.
Maybe we better haul him out. If he starts to sober up...
Maybe we'd better.
Okay, one, two...
Wait a minute.
What?
I'm getting something, Ira. What? This is fantastic. Oh, I'm getting something.
All right, haul him out, quick. Come on.
Ramblin' wreck from Georgia Tech. Brady,
are you all right? Doc, help me. Take a look at him. Is he okay?
Yes, he's okay. Just passed out.
Let's get him back to the ship.
Right. You know what, Ira?
What?
Tomorrow about 9 a.m., we're going to be in on the most colossal hangover in the history of Mornings After.
We were in on more than Doc Spencer had bargained for. More than any human being had any business being in on.
Oh.
Well, Brady, how do you feel?
Shoot me.
You turned the trick.
Trick?
The tower. You hooked into the egg. The stuff is rolling out now. Doc and the boys have got a recording hooked up. The stuff they're listening in on is enough to set your teeth on edge.
What's that?
The information that mind trap has been collecting for hundreds of years. It'll take us years to sort it out, but we're getting some of it straight already.
Any of our own stuff?
Plenty.
Anything on engines?
Well, not on our engines.
So?
We got the dope on the junkyard engine. Mac and the boys are helping to get it assembled. We're ripping out our own engines and just keeping some of the parts.
Another junkyard, huh?
Another junkyard. The engine we're building now is superior to anything ever built.
Pretty handy little gadget, that egg. Only one thing.
What's that?
Tell Doc if he comes across a good hangover remedy to let me know, huh?
Oh.
It took us about 6 days to assemble new engines using some of our parts and some of the advanced designs from the junkyard. During most of that time, Doc Spencer sat down at the tower with a set of headphones monitoring the information from the egg. He was like a man possessed. I didn't think anything unnatural was happening until the night of the sixth day. Well, that does it. The boys have got the engines ready for blastoff. There's a full moon, too.
We should be able to lift her by tomorrow morning, huh?
We're blasting off in exactly 1 minute, Batters.
What?
In exactly 1 minute.
But Ira, Doc, and some of the techno boys are down monitoring that egg.
I know it.
Well, it'll take them 20 minutes to get back into the ship with all that equipment.
They're not getting back.
Huh?
I said they're not getting back.
Ira, are you nuts?
Come here, Batters. I want you to take a look through this field scope. You can get a good close-up of Doc and the boys who have been monitoring that egg.
Now, wait till I get it focused.
You got them?
Yeah.
Take a close-up.
Mother in heaven.
You see why we have to leave them here?
Those faces, they're like some kind of beast. What is it, Ira? What's happened to them?
The same thing that must have happened to the crew of the last ship that touched here. The same thing that made them blast out of here in such a tearing hurry.
What?
That is, there isn't only knowledge in that thing. Those boys are monitoring something else.
Something else.
Personality, that is. They're not human anymore. They're turning alien. They were still there when the ship roared up away from Planet Nine and pointed her silver nose toward Earth. We could see them in the scopes. A group of tiny figures crouched over the recording equipment, their earphones plugged into the egg. They didn't even look up when we blasted off. They were no longer human now. They were something else. Something a million light years old. And of another world.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.